So hello folks, today I'm talking with an author of a book called How to Become a Superhero. His name is Sage Michael, and I'm talking over the telephone with him today, and Sage is out in Utah. How is the weather there in Utah, Sage?
At the moment, it's very cold. We got a bunch of snow going on over here.
Yeah, the last time I was in Utah, there was some snow also. Now, you took my class on survival skills maybe over a year ago, and this is when I became familiar with your book, How to Become a Superhero. It shows a guy like a Marvel comic character on the cover, but actually it's a very serious book. You might think it's some kind of a comic book, but I'm going to read a little section that you have in the very first page, and it's a little teaser. It says, "Your cell phone is ringing. It's a blocked number. You have no idea who it is or what they want, but you know it's urgent, a matter of life or death, of maintaining the existence of the world as you know it today. This person knows you have bought this book. They know you are on a quest to become a superhero, and they need you right this moment. There is no time to read, to learn, nor to train. This is your call to adventure. Answer the call." So that's how you introduce your book. Tell us what you mean by becoming a superhero, Sage.
Sure. It's a good question, too. It's the idea that man can become more than they are. You know, Nietzsche said it was possible that man is interesting not because of their destination, but because to something more exciting. And I try to lead the reader through that in the book.
So you're appealing to an average kind of guy like me, who's half crippled, one foot in the grave, doesn't know today from yesterday, right? That's who you're appealing to?
Well, I don't know that. I've taken your class, and it's pretty amazing, so I don't think I agree with all of that.
Well, I'm just, you know, let's say the average person out there, they feel there's something more in life. I mean, this is who you're appealing to, right? They can become more than what they think they are.
Absolutely, because it's within everyone.
And what is within everyone? What is that's within everyone?
Well, you know, sort of your ideal self. You know, there's an exercise in the book where I say, if you're ever faced with a situation that you can't handle, don't ask the question, you know, what would Superman do or what would Batman do or, you know, your high school gym teacher do, but ask the question of what you would do if you were really present, if you were the best you could be, your ideal self.
Okay. What page of the book is that on? I have your book in front of me here. Uh-oh, he doesn't memorize every single page. That's okay. Okay, so in other words, make it personal when you have situations. We always have situations we've backed down from. We were frightened. We didn't think we were up to the situation. You know, me too. That's how we learn. So that's what your book is about. So tell me how to go about that. What are my tools that you're going to give me in this book for becoming my ideal self?
Sure, absolutely. There are things that I really liked that I saw, you know, for example, having a mission statement. You know, a lot of companies, they have a mission statement, but not a lot of people have a mission statement. So one of the things I suggest is, if you had a mission statement, if you knew what your purpose was in life, and so start with the idea of a mission statement, even though it doesn't appear until much later in the book, but the idea of knowing your mission and then going through and gathering tools to help you.
Well, look, Sage, let's say I'm Joe Average. I don't know what my mission statement is. I know I want to do something more. How do I even go about coming up with a mission statement? Do I just make something up or what?
Well, no, you don't exactly make it up. You find what's already inside you. You know, for a lot of people, they think about, and all it takes is just thinking. It's really interesting. You think about certain just events in your life, you
okay.
know, working with kids or going to the mall, whatever it is. As you're going through these different thoughts, it's really like flipping through pages. You're like, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? And what I found that happens with people is when they find their mission statement, their thing, there's something emotional inside them that triggers, and they're like, yeah, that's it. That's what I'm looking for.
In other words, you might be at a summer camp, or you might be in college, or you might be working in a factory or doing something, and suddenly it appeals to you. Is this what you're saying?
Well, not that what you're doing necessarily appeals to you, although it might, but as you are going through the exercises, let me give you a specific...
Okay.
In chapter five, I've got some ways that people... I had three or four ways that people can identify what their mission statement is. And the very first one, the very first method is you just know it. Maybe you could just... You're talking to a friend or something, and something really stirs you. Maybe it makes you emotional or really happy or cry even, and you're like, okay, that's my thing. But if that doesn't work for you, go on to step two.
Sometimes if I can jump in, though, sometimes people might have a general sense, I really want to work in this general area. I want to work in the space industry, let's say, or I want to work in the entertainment industry. It's a little harder to be very specific with the mission statement, isn't it?
No, because what's interesting about it is, you know, we're living our whole lives anyway. Every day, we're spending our days doing whatever task it is, and you look back, and sometimes you've accumulated 5 or 10 years of just doing something, not necessarily doing the right thing. And what my contention is that that's going to, if you pick your field, let's say it's entertainment, the entertainment industry, for example, if you just start doing it, yeah, it's going to take you a while. But man is very interesting in the sense that we, in it, always succeed at what we are after.
We always succeed in what we are after, meaning, I guess that means the more clearly we've defined a goal, the more likely we can achieve it, right?
That's 100% correct.
Interesting. Yes. Without, okay.
You're compassless. You're without a map. You're just floating around on the ocean, hoping to sail into that port. And it never happened.
Okay, that's why all the hippies failed. They just like let it flow. I mean, I always still to this day people say, oh, just let it flow. And I'm thinking, yeah, you can let things flow. They may not be flowing the way that you really had anticipated or the most productive way for it to flow. You know?
That's exactly right.
So you give some tips. I mean, you know, somebody has to come up with their own mission statement. I get that. Then you give some tips about, in general, what people need to do. Like on page 59, I'm looking at in the mission statement chapter, speak strongly. Use superhero verbiage. So you're big on not linguistics, but using the right power words. Because when I read that, I thought, well, you know, this is true. Sometimes academic types or even truly bright people, they speak different from the rest of us. They've mastered linguistics and language, and they're tricking us, although some of them are, like the politicians, but it's more like they have mastered their inner mind and their thinking process, and their mastery of language is just reflecting that inner refinement. And so you picked up on that you need to speak strongly and use, you know the right language, and you're also,
you know, Noam Chomsky. Sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, you say keep your mission statement very brief, too. 3 sentences at the most, so that's like really right to the point.
Absolutely. To go back to the thing of superhero verbiage, you know, Noam Chomsky, a professor of linguistics at MIT, and very outspoken in a lot of areas, says that the better you have a grasp of language, the better you can define your reality with your language, you create for yourself, because you have these fine-tunements and adjustments and things. And so as I was going through this, I thought, you know, superhero verbiage is the sort of strength that really projects. You know, you don't say, I hope I'm... You say, I am doing this right now. This is happening.
So that's a little
bit... It really brings it into reality.
That's a little bit of into the positive thinking aspect too, right? Would you call it...
Well, there's some of that.
Uh-huh.
Some of that, because you have to know that you're not going to fail. And truthfully, you won't fail. You'll find, you know, maybe 50 ways that don't work, but those are not failures. You know, let me give you a statement I heard the other day. Knew you had 32 failures to go through before you won big, before you hit your great success, then every time you got one, you'd think, great, that's awesome. I am one step closer.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think I didn't see this quote in your book, but it's a good one you can steal from me. And it could have been Benjamin Franklin, but it was something like, the road to success is paved with the cobblestones of our failures.
And absolutely.
And I thought, you know, I mean, some of my failures have led me nowhere, but some of them have been, I wouldn't have learned what I know if I hadn't failed in that learning process. So that's important. So,
well, absolutely, but if I can change that verbiage a little bit for you, instead of saying it hasn't led you anywhere, perhaps it kept you from being led down the wrong path.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I'm the kind of person, I would say, when I read this book, I'm not like a, you know, I'm not a teenager, so when I read the book, I tried to see if I had applied in my life any of the principles that you've described for, you know, fulfilling your life's goals, really. And I feel that some of them I have, some of them I haven't. Some of them were helping me to refine my thinking. But I've always been interested in so many things that I often seem like I'm down this path and down that path. And let's say even just something you're interested in to really become genuinely conversant and knowledgeable, I'd say that it always takes a minimum of 2 years to plunge into something. Most things take at least that long. And then sometimes I've discovered, well, you know something? I'm glad I did that. I know enough for this lifetime, but I'm not going to pursue it anymore. So maybe I'm using the word failure incorrectly in that sense. You could construe it as such things as on a side path that didn't get you to where you thought your main goal was, but perhaps ultimately all of these things lead us to whatever it is we're trying to do. You know, you brought up another point. I don't know what section it is, Sage, in your superhero book, about the importance. You had a list of things that everybody who's trying to become a superhero, in quotes, trying to become their ideal self, learn another language. And I think this relates to the mastering whatever your you know, English or whatever your primary language is, because what I have found is that, I mean, I'm not totally fluent yet at Spanish, but I can speak it, and I know a few bits of a few other languages. People really do think differently and construct the reality differently in different because of the language that you use. I don't think people get that if they speak just one language.
No, you're absolutely right. It really your life, and you can also interact with people that you've never been able to interact with, and maybe it leads you to go to another country to check it out, and there's all these experiences. If you could just absorb, you know, at the rate that babies do, just absorb everything around for language, you would be just intensely richer as a person, I think, as you are with just the one language. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, certainly where I live here in Southern California, Spanish is your optimum second choice, and then Chinese shortly thereafter, because we have an increasing Chinese population. And I mean, just the reality is that you can talk to more people. I mean, that's whether you're trying to use it in some manner to achieve your goals is almost irrelevant. It's so enriching to oneself. It isn't funny. In chapter 12, you call it magnificence. A first look at choosing your superpowers. That's where the second language idea came from. I found that to be a very interesting chapter. You've defined a lot of things already up to this point, but you have a lot of suggestions. Now, I'm just curious, for the person who gets the book, they're going to find this is like, it looks like you've looked at everything and thought of all the ways that people have talked about self-fulfillment, and you've condensed it into this book and you know, gave it a kind of a popular zing to it. But how did you come up with these ideas, all these suggestions to improve yourself? Some of these are not, you know, like human lie detection. Learn about neurolinguistics. Look to the right or look to the left if they're lying or telling the truth. Things like that. I mean, this is really deep. There could be whole books on some of your little paragraphs in here. So how did you come up with
that? No, and you're right. My wife tells me all the time, actually, that I should expand it and write in time on those paragraphs. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So Did you just more or less assemble your data as you researched the book, and it flowed in a natural way, or how did you go about it?
Well, you know what? This actually, the genesis of this started with consulting. You know, I've done business consulting for the Pentagon a couple of times, some large businesses like Visa, Bank of America, Union Bank, you know, et cetera. And, you know, just as practices in those industries and in those companies, I found that there are really best practices for people in our daily lives as well. And most of them really boil down to one thing: try a little bit harder or go a little bit longer than you would have before.
That's your success formula, huh?
It really is, because, you know, that everybody will travel miles and miles, but very few people will go those last few steps. The interesting thing is you never know what's right around the corner. For all you know, success is right there. So maybe if you a little bit more or tried a little bit harder,
yeah,
you'd hit it.
That's very interesting.
Well, and I think there's probably parallels in survival as well. You know, I'm actually quite familiar with the book you might have heard of called How to Survive Anywhere.
How to Survive Anywhere. Shameless plug, okay.
And I can tell you, when you think you're down and out, you don't want to give up. You want to go a little bit. You just never know.
Right, right. You do talk about, you know, rather holistically, I would say, how to become your, to achieve your full potential, you need to have well-rounded skills. Your health needs to be in check. You do mention taking survival classes somewhere in the book, just because you develop a certain sense of self-confidence that you can apply to other things in the world. I mean, this is why the Boy Scouts are such a good organization, because you're learning survival skills, but these guys grow up to be leaders. They it's not just making a fire in the woods. It's applying the planning, you know, and the strategies and the timetables and the schedules to, you know, to life situations. That's kind of what you've got in the book here.
Exactly, like that, because, you know, so many of us are disconnected from food production. So many of us are disconnected from just you know, to quote your book again, you have how to make a brush in the wild. And I thought that was so interesting. It never occurred to me, A, that I would need to, or B, how I could ever do it. And because of that, we're really not resourceful. And I think that when you all, first of all, when you do know these things, when you do take the time to learn as much as you can about whatever it is, you become what I like to call a subject matter expert.
Uh-huh.
When you are that person, it's very easy for people to come to you for advice, for tips, because you are the SME, you are the subject matter expert, and you're the person you're naturally leading because you know more than they do, and you're willing to help them. So it absolutely creates leaders, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that you had done all the consulting that you had mentioned. I just thought you were this bald guy who had written a really good book.
Yeah, I am that also.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like about the book, in various chapters, you have these blank pages, and you're asking the reader to fill in what you're trying to do and how you want to do it. In other words, it's just a line. I'm trying to look at an example here. Your superhero type. Okay, you say, after carefully considering the three categories, I choose to be a blank, and this is because blank. You have blanks for my mission. You have blanks for I can summarize my moral alignment by saying, and then there's, you let the reader fill it in. So in other words, it's a guidebook. You really are telling and giving the reader a lot of good ideas, but you are sort of moving them into, you know, personalizing it, because otherwise it's just intellectual stimulation.
Well, you know, it's true, and it's actually one of my favorite parts of the book is not even the concept that it is a guidebook, but part is that what happens when you start defining your life is you start getting the things that you want, and it's never too late to start. So somebody might say, you know, I've always had eggs this way, or I've always shop or whatever, just because, and they're not really defining what they want. And what I think is, what happens when you start writing it down, when you start deciding, you put thought into, you know, who am I really? Who do my friends think I am? Who do I portray every day? When you start designing that, I think is when it really starts to crystallize and become true.
Now, let me ask you, did you do this on your level first before you put the book together? Did you come up with your own statement and your goals and so forth in the same manner?
I absolutely did.
Yeah.
At the time, it was about writing. It was about finishing this book. It was through the process. And I say at the time because I think our lives change, and it's okay to redefine your mission statement. It's okay to say, I was that person, but now I think I want to go be that person. You know, I had a really funny experience many, many years ago, 30 years ago. Someone said to me, you know, a lot of people think they have 10 years of experience, but they don't. They've got 1 year 10 times.
I see.
Really, really hit home. And so, you know, I'm never going to be that person. I am going to go find 10 years of experience. Now, my resume looks terrible, but my life is enriched, and I know just way more than I would have.
What do you mean your resume looks terrible? What's that mean?
Oh, my goodness. I was so interested in trying so many different things that I would make a terrible employee. If I were to work for someone else, I'd make a terrible employee because, you know, I did this for a year and that for a year and this for a year, and I've learned a lot about business and about consulting and about... And so it shows that I've got, you know, I guess on paper it really looks like a scattered sort of existence, but I think if they all go to enriching you, to fulfilling you, your mission, which is the key part of the book, I think it's absolutely fine for you to change your mission statement as you need to.
Yeah, that's interesting what you just said. One time when I really needed a job, this was 30 years ago or so, I tried to get a job selling vacuum cleaners door-to-door, if you can believe that. And they looked at my resume, and he said, there's a year gap here. And I'm thinking, I'm selling, you want me to go door-to-door selling vacuum cleaners, for God's sake, and you're questioning my resume? And, you know, I mean, in other words, I ended up not doing it because I didn't want to do that. But I often find that guys like you and maybe me, we're almost unemployable in the regular world because we're doing our own things, finding our own mission statement and just pursuing it. And the world...
You know, you're exactly right. It means, to me anyway, it means that you are bigger than that, that or more than that. You know, they say that concrete, a sidewalk, whatever, on your path, it's not your path. It's someone else's path that you're on.
Oh, I see.
I firmly believe that.
Because they've already gone there.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have a number of checklists, which I find interesting. My core power checklist. I'm just going to read it, and I guess it's for people to pursue these and to check them off. Speed reading. Now, I'd have to say, okay, I'm going to read the list first, and I'm going to comment. Speed reading, reflex training system, running and athleticism, which is a big topic, do it now, CPR, first aid, time management, volunteerism, master of class, advanced memory power, meditation, and neuro-linguistic programming. This is your core power checklist. And, you know, I you're obviously trying to get trying to create a well-rounded individual. Remember John Wooden, I think UCLA coach, was it USC or UCLA? UCLA coach. He always used to say, I'm not training basketball players. I'm training people to live a good life. You know, he was considered the greatest coach of all time. But speed...
It's 100% right.
Yeah, but I would have to say speed reading. I'm not a speed reader. I read a lot. I end up having to read a book 2 and 3 times. Now, when I do the speed reading technique, I know what it means and I've tried it. I'm just saying, for me, and everybody has to find their own way, for me, I might be getting the overall picture, but I'm never really delving into it. I read slowly these days, and if it's a good book, I'll read it twice and take a lot of notes. If it's a book that I'm going to use in my thinking and in my lecturing or in my classes, but that's neither here nor there. What does master of class mean?
Actually,
yeah, go ahead.
if I may, speed reading actually, you know, I don't read books fast. I read them slow and methodically, just like you do. What speed reading gives you is the ability information at a quick rate, which you can apply to your daily life. You can size up situations on the street. You can size up what's going on with a particular company. You can size up things because you've trained your mind to take quickly, and that's why I like speed reading so much.
I see. Well, I'm not trying to find disagreements. I'm just sharing my opinion, but that's a good point. Then you also have, that was my core power checklist. Then you have my superpower checklist. I find that interesting. You have three categories, three columns: freelancer, free runner, and flyer. And freelancer has, and by the way, what does that mean? Freelancer, free runner, and flyer. What does that mean, those three categories?
Sure, absolutely.
This is on page 119, by the way. Freelancer, are you there? It's going to record it. Okay, I'm recording, so there's a little beat you have to take out at 26 minutes. I'll make a note of that. Okay, so shall we continue? So the page 119, Sage, has your superpower checklist, and you've got three categories on this checklist. There's freelancer, free runner, and flyer. And these are all powers and abilities that the superhero wants to develop. But what do the three categories mean? Freelancer, free runner, and flyer.
Sure, absolutely. Let me explain that. In fact, I'll start with the core power checklist. The core was everybody should have those things regardless of what they chose afterwards. You know, things like CPR, first aid, those are just great things to have. And then you get into categories of who you are and not just sort of your base core that we would expect of a superhero, like being athletic perhaps, or managing his time well, volunteering, that sort of thing that we might expect in today's world. So with the super categories that we have, I really tried to divide it up into three areas. I felt with freelancer, which is the first one, this person is sort of the superhero of their job. In other words, you love what you do, you want everything in your life, and you want to be the best at it that you can and be really sort of the elite at that job. And I would actually characterize you personally as maybe a freelancer, in the sense that you're great at what you do. I've taken your class, I've read your book, and I know that you really put out a quality. And a lot of people just don't, it seems, they just don't take as much time with their efforts, with what really turns out to be their life's work. And so I might be tempted to put you in that category.
Even though I like a lot of the things in your other lists, huh?
Well, absolutely. So there's a couple other areas, right? And the difference between the next two, the free runner, this is a person that has taken the physical things of their life that they want to sort of expand on, where with the flyer they've taken the mental. So what I mean by that is this.
Oh.
If someone is learning, parkour, let's say, or martial arts, or some sort of physical interaction. So in comic books it would have been, you know, like a Batman who's in really great shape and he beats people up, you know, physically, etc. Look at police officers that way. Although you might call them a freelancer in the sense that they're dedicated to their job. And then with a flyer, you've got someone who has really taken sort of the mental, more serene, I guess, get it, but you know, in the comic books it would be people that have a sort of a mental power. So like Storm, for example, or Jean Grey from the X-Men, or in life there are healers, there the, you know, religious leaders that, like the Dalai Lama, for example, that you could say he really is a flyer, because the things that he does comes from somewhere more ethereal and not somewhere, you know, in the physical sense.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about Gandhi or Mother Teresa. Although there's some overlap, right? Because if their job, their career was helping others, then maybe you could put them into that category. So it's just a way to help people figure out starting point.
It's interesting. So there are three different categories of the way you perceive yourself, I suppose. I'm going to read the list because it's a fascinating list. The freelancer, you have a little checklist, conversational hypnotism, which, well, why don't you can have to explain that one. I know what hypnotism means in a colloquial sense, but it probably means a lot more, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, a lot of times in our normal conversation, we fall into, in fact, in our normal lives, have you ever been driving and then not know how you ended up somewhere?
Yes, I have. I hate to say it, but I have.
I agree. Unfortunately, I've done the same thing. We zone out, and it just happens that happens. And so in the conversational hypnotism, there's ways to sort of use that to your advantage. And, of course, I'm not suggesting that anybody take advantage of anyone else. I'm talking building rapport, for example, or powers of suggestion, or, you know, what's interesting about conversational hypnotism, there are even certain phrases you can say that stop the mind from working.
What does that mean exactly, stop the mind from working? You mean somebody who's harassing you or what?
No. I mean, if I were talking to you, I could say a sentence or two that would stop your mind from working. You would stop thinking.
Is this just a teaser, or are you going to give me one of those sentences?
Oh, I certainly can. It's really easy, actually. Milton Erickson did this a lot as well. He's the founder of sort of what we consider modern, and a lot of folks are doing it. Honestly, you can YouTube videos about it. It's very easy. So if I was talking to you, and perhaps you said something that I didn't like, let's say I were a salesperson, and I were trying to sell you something, and the conversation starts a direction different than what I wanted, if I said something like, you know, it's a good thing cows don't fall from cars,
I see.
Your mind has to stop for a minute and be like, I don't even know what that means. But you take advantage of that gap by saying something positive that brings it's called a pattern interrupt in NLP. It brings the conversation back to the direction you want that person out of their unconscious pattern.
So that would be like me saying to you, Sage, you know, I can dress you up, but I can't make you drink water. Okay, whatever.
That would probably just make me laugh.
Okay, good. So then you have on the freelancer category, parental powers, okay, learn a language. These are somewhat self-evident. Public speaking, human lie detection, and stealth. All very good skills. However you use them. Then on free runner, tactical driving, that's one I've not pursued. Martial arts is on your list, I've pursued it. Small arms training, I've pursued. Knife throwing, I've pursued. Lock picking, I've taken a bell saw lock smithing course, although I never finished it, so you could say I'm a bell saw dropout. Survival skills, I teach. Police academy, now unless you're joining the police force, you don't really go through the academy though, do you?
No, you can. Can take it. It's a long process.
I didn't realize that they let civilians take it, their training, without the intent to become a police officer.
Yeah, it's called post-training, and you can sign up for it if you... But, you know, it's a long investment of your time.
Yeah. You also have gadgetry...
But I think it's that.
You also have gadgetry on your free runner list. That's like MacGyver things, right?
You know, it is, but it's one of my favorite paths. It's not my very favorite, but it's one of my favorite powers in that it's about using things around you, but not only physical things. It's just, you know, maybe somebody says something to you that is just such a great piece of wisdom, and 2 minutes later you get a chance to conversation with somebody else, and it's, you know, or locations, or, you know, something just came along that fortuitously fit perfectly into your next, you know, hour or something. It's that sort of thing, and I really like it.
Okay, good. And then your last column on the superpower checklist is the flyer. And this is a very interesting list. Like you said, it's for the more mental or ethereal. But the first one is remote viewing. And I'm going to have you explain remote viewing.
Sure, absolutely. Remote viewing, you know, I had a great experience. I won't go into the complete details of it, but I had a great experience where there was an address in my mailbox. Somebody had put it on a card in my mailbox, which was a locked box inside of a locked room, inside of another locked room, no postage, no anything, just this address. It wasn't my address, it was someone else's address. It was around 11 o'clock, to myself, you know what, this is very interesting, I need to go check this out. I got in my car, I drove to this other address, and somebody was waiting for me in this building. They let me in, we sat down and talked, and I really began to understand and find out what doing was. And it is the idea that you can perceive something in its entirety accurately without being there, without physically seeing it. So someone presented me with a sealed envelope, and in that envelope was a picture of, I don't know, Mount Kilimanjaro, that I would be able to know exactly. I could describe it in detail. I could tell you the temperatures there. I could tell you the lay of the land, the way it looked, you know, everything, and know what it was without knowing what was in there.
Well,
in the same way, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so that's on your checklist. What does that mean? You learn, you it doesn't just happen automatically to have that skill. You take a class in it, or what do?
You have to actually learn how to do it, yes. There's courses that you can take to learn it. There are, you know, videos that you can buy and that sort of thing. I can, you know, teach it to a person. It's interesting. I have a great, great success with it. I don't use it as much as I should, I suppose, but it's really a lot of fun.
So I've done it a little bit, just practicing, and I was able to confirm with another party at a distant location the accuracy of what I was seeing, and I've heard that the military has used it. There was that comedy movie, I forgot what it was called, with
Man Who Talked with Goats.
Yeah,
I saw that movie.
But I have a friend in the military that said, even though it was they made it laughable, he said there were some factual bases to that movie, that they actually have had programs like that. Another one on your list is lucid dreaming, which means that you really are, it's almost like your remote viewing or your next one out of body experiences. So what would you say is the practicality of developing these skills?
Sure. Okay, so they're all different. Now, if you take lucid dreaming, for example, LaBerge wrote some great books on the subject, but it is the idea that if your subconscious is really where all of our life's intentions and dreams and things really happen, and I believe that our subconscious is what makes our future, that if you could go actively alert and awake and deal with all of those things and create those things and sort of fine-tune them the way you want, that you would accelerate much faster. You would be able to get to your goals faster. You'd have more peace, you know, the obvious things like no night, you know, but I think it really has a big impact on your life. So I would say it's very impactful.
I know that I, just as a matter of course, I listen to my dreams, and they often are messages for other people, so I just call them and I tell them what I dreamed, and usually they just politely thank me. But, you know, basically what we're saying is if you could know what you don't know and need to know, here's a way to do it. So, I mean, they're very interesting. You also have traditional Chinese medicine. Why did you pick traditional Chinese medicine on your list?
You know, the main reason I pick it is they have a concept in the West that we don't really understand here, or not that we don't understand it, but we don't utilize it as much.
They have a concept in the East, you meant, Sage.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
They have a concept there in the East that we do not understand as well here in the West, and that is that the person is a complete universe in and of themselves. Your body is a complete universe. You are a complete universe, and they really work well with chi, or qi, some people call it, energy, and what that does. In a lot of ways, I've seen it in some of the martial arts I've taken. I've seen it in, you know, any of the acupressure things have proven themselves, that it is all about flow, that it is all about the holistic nature. It's impressive.
Yeah. And the last thing on your list is a term that probably most people have never heard, shibumi. And I think when we talked at the class, I think you were the only person, maybe the second person, that's ever heard of that book before called Shibumi, the spy book called Shibumi.
It was written a long time ago, so I totally understand. It was written in the 70s, and I really like the concept. It is an idea of effort, and one way to explain it is that you don't have to try there is just sort of a knowing as you go through life and go through things and events that it is effortless and amazing, and you are perfection itself. And it's such a good takeaway from this book.
You know, I think in the book Shibumi, he takes a couple of pages to define the term Shibumi, which is
kind
of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't do it justice.
By the way,
great author, and
we're almost getting to the end of our time, but I neglected to do this at the beginning. How do people reach you, Sage?
Thank you very much for asking. They can find me at my website, which is superpress.com.
Superwhat.com?
Superhero Press.
So superheropress.com, okay. And if anybody has difficulty reaching you, they can always contact me and I'll put them in touch with you.
100% correct, absolutely.
And the book, can the book be obtained at probably Amazon, right?
It's on Amazon, it's in Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. They can also get it from me, and if they get it from me, sign it for them.
Okay, so that's Superhero Press, for those of you who are listening. It's How to Become a Superhero, The Ultimate Guide to the Ultimate You. And what I like about the rear of the book is that you talk about literature and you talk about books and movies that, and I'm big on that. I'm big on pointing to movies and extracting certain lessons from them. Some of them are surprising that you list. For example, for music, you have inspirational music. You have Kill Bill Volume 1. Okay. Now, I must say that this is just when I had heard about it, you know, for a long time. I wanted to see it because Tarantino makes provocative movies, to say the least. But I wanted to see David Carradine in there, which I don't think he appears in Kill Bill 1. But I found Kill Bill 1, it's nonstop carnage. Kill Bill 2, I liked the music. Did you see, you've seen Kill Bill 2, no doubt, right?
Yes.
And there's a little cutaway at the back if you buy the DVD that has this group playing a concert, some of the Kill Bill 2 music. Anyway, I music appeals to different people in different ways. And then you have a lot of books, the Navy SEAL workout book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, that goes way, way back, and books on lucid dreaming, some of the things that we talked about. And you talk about movies, too. So The Matrix is one. I always thought The Matrix was a fascinating, somewhat of an analogy to life on Earth, just the way things actually are.
Absolutely. It's 100% realistic. You know, it's not about the whole, you know, alien robot thing, whatever, but it's realistic in the sense that we create our own reality every day.
Mm-hmm.
Real, and we can make it what we want if we believe in our own future.
And I know that you are choosing movies and books, and I might do that in one of my future books. I list reading lists all the time. One of my favorite movies, maybe I have a more fatalistic view of the world and of people sometimes, even though I'm a very optimistic person, but have you ever seen the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Oh, with Donald Sutherland, yeah.
Yeah, that was filmed here locally in Sierra Madre, and I always tell people, watch it. I was told that one of the inspirations was alcoholism. You know, that if you're all drinking, everybody's okay. But another idea is that we're all kind of asleep, and we have to really work hard. We really have to work hard to break out, you know, and basically do what you're suggesting in your book, take control of your life. And you're using the superhero just as an analogy, in a sense. I mean, just you become your own superhero and who you feel you're destined to become. I want to share a few.
Exactly right.
Have you heard of, I'm trying to think of the title, S.I. Hayakawa wrote a book called Language and Thought in Action. Are you familiar with that book?
No. Say it again. I didn't even hear the name
okay,
of it.
Okay, Language in Thought and Action, and it was written by a former California State Senator, S.I. Hayakawa. So I've always recommended that because you start with the importance of language skills. And what S.I. Hayakawa talks about in Language and Thought in Action is how the connotative value of words varies from person to person, and how you really do need to have extreme care in the words that you select, because you are creating a reality. You actually, it's not just words. You are creating the reality in your mind and even out there in the world. And it makes you feel good about something, or it makes you inspirational, or it makes you mad or angry, or it causes revolutions. So that's one that I would recommend to all of your readers, too. You might want to get a copy of it, Language and Thought in Action.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one other one, Sage, that I've always liked, and I've mentioned it on this show before, is The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. And that was written... Okay, you got to jot that one down. That's an awesome book. It was written during the labor movement about how people are so influenced by mass movements and the mob mentality. And basically, he just analyzes it so that you can avoid getting caught up in the wrong aspects of it. It kind of relates to your book. Now, we just got a couple of minutes. We got a couple of minutes, and there's a few things in the back of your book. It's Appendix 2, page 247. I want to share these. Shakespeare was just a writer. It says, "Can you change the world?" Shakespeare was just a writer. J.K. Rowling of the Harry Potter, she was a welfare mother. Van Gogh suffered from depression and sometimes acted out violently. Red Cloud and Geronimo had no formal education. Okay, Elvis was a truck driver who lived in poverty while his dad was in prison. In other words, quit making excuses for yourself. That's what you're saying here, right?
That's exactly.
Yeah, Martin Luther King Jr. Was just a preacher. He was not a rich businessman. He was not a president. Mother Teresa never held an office. Gandhi never made $1 million. Okay, Jesus of Nazareth did not start with 1 million followers. He had 12, 11 if you don't count Judas. He was just a carpenter. And then, so your point is that you don't have to make excuses for yourself. I could do this if only I had more money. I could do this only, you know, if my spouse supported me. I could do this if I was born at another time. I could do this, excuse, excuse, excuse. And the bottom line is, wherever you are, you're in the right place to proceed with the rest of your life and become a superhero, right?
That's exactly 100% correct, yes.
Good. I should be paid to be your promoter.
I would like that.
Hey, Sage, I'd like to talk again sometime, and maybe we can go into more detail. But tell us one last time and give us a P.O. box or a website where people can contact you.
Sure. They can definitely reach me through superheropress.com. I've got my personal cell phone number up there. I am reachable. Understand that there are more of you are many and I am one, as William Gibson says. So I can't get back to everybody, but you can email me there. You can call me there. And if I'm able to work with you, because I like the idea of more people becoming superheroes. So if you buy the book and you get a hold of me, I will go through the book with you. As you're going through your exercises and your experiences, if you need help, I will help you.
Right. And I guarantee you, folks, if you take the book, you follow what he's laid out, and you take action. Don't just read it and put it to the side. You take the action specified, you know, choose action for yourself. It's going to change your life. It's going to improve your life a little or a lot. That's totally up to you. Thank you, Sage, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.